The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Coming to your cordless, everybody. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, and 10:02 p.m. where I'm sitting here in Northeast Minneapolis. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night. I think it's edition number 63, if I'm right. I'm pissed off. I'll tell you about why in a second. I just want to tell you, our guest tonight is Mark Morano from ClimateDepot.com. You've seen him on CNN, on Fox News. He's all over the media. He's pretty much the premier non-scientist climate denier in America. That's pretty much his milieu, and of course that's one of mine too. And so we have a fascinating discussion. We taped this at about 1 p.m. Central Time this afternoon. Because this show runs so late, and especially for the people on the East Coast where they would come on at 11:20 to 11:25 p.m., we give them the option of taping in the afternoon, and most people take us up on that. We always run those interviews the day they're done because for timeliness, and there's a reason for that, and today is one of those days. Between the time we finish this interview at 1:30 p.m. in the afternoon and the time we're going on now, a whole bunch happened. There's a whole bunch of news that happened that we probably would have referenced in the interview, and that's the reason I'm bringing this up, and I just want to point out that's why I'm pissed off. The Supreme Court of the state of Colorado has ruled that Donald Trump is ineligible to be on the ballot there, both for the primaries and the general election. It's a seven-person court, a seven-judge court. All those judges have been appointed by Democrats. All of them are Democratic. The vote was 4-3. The ruling is that he violated the insurrection clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution. So what this does is it takes the ability for people to vote for Donald Trump off the ballot. Now, this was lost in the whole rigmarole here, but this is part of the ruling. You can't even write Donald Trump's name in. If you do, it won't be counted. In other words, so this is different. I mean, there's all sorts of restrictions people can't take office, but you can still put them on a ballot and still, like, vote for them. You know, I mean, for example, if someone was not in that, for president, I'm just going to use president, but I mean, even in local races, there's all sorts of reasons. If someone's not a natural born U.S. citizen and you write them in and somehow they win, okay, they can't take office, but your vote is still counted. Here they're talking about not counting votes. If you write Donald Trump's name in, not only is he not going to be on the ballot, but if you write his name in, your vote won't be counted. They've ruled that. So what they basically, they're telling the people of Colorado who they can't vote for. I think this is a watershed moment. I can't tell. I got so mad when I heard this, I started shaking. I'm not kidding. It's like, so you're telling the American populace they can't vote for somebody even if they want to. This is, you know, and everyone's pointed out all the legal analysts, so come on. The talking heads, and well, you know, this is probably almost certainly going to be overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court because the four justices that voted for this had to jump through so many legal hoops to come to this conclusion. It's ridiculous. That's the reason, I mean, this has been tried like a dozen times so far and hasn't succeeded. I never thought it would. It's like there's no, I mean, I won't even, well, maybe I should go through the legal reasons why this shouldn't happen. First of all, Jack Smith did not charge Donald Trump with insurrection, even though I'm sure he wanted to badly. And the reason he didn't is there's no evidence for it. There's none. Now, all those liberals who think that Donald Trump led led a riot to the Capitol on January 6, 2021, I got something to tell you. No, he didn't. And I have made this case numerous times, and nobody believes me, but I don't really care. If Donald Trump hadn't shown up at that rally on January 6th, the same thing would have happened. He does not have any sort of magical hypnotic control over his supporters. He doesn't. You have to understand, and when I mean you, I guess I'm talking to Democrats, have to understand, these people were and are legitimately pissed off. Now, whether they have a right to be pissed off or not, that's a whole different issue. You know, we can talk about that ad infinitum. But the point is, they stormed the Capitol because they were pissed off, not because Donald Trump told them to. First of all, he didn't. As a matter of fact, he said the opposite. He said nothing in that speech at the rally that instigated any sort of insurrection or riot. Nothing. He said the opposite. He said, we will peacefully and patriotically go to the Capitol building to make our voices heard, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. But that's what he said. So everyone seems to think, oh, I mean, I actually have Democratic friends who think that Donald Trump has literally, I have a friend of mine told me he literally thought that Trump has hypnotized people through the television. It's like, this is crazy shit. The fact that you don't understand why people are doing this doesn't mean they don't have a reason. Now, okay, like I said, maybe the reason's not valid, maybe it isn't, but they have a reason, and it wasn't because Trump told them to. So there's absolutely no insurrection here, and Jack Smith obviously came to the same conclusion, because I'm sure he would have loved to have charged Donald Trump with insurrection. I mean, he would have. That was the primary goal here, you know. But there's no evidence of it. And the other thing that really pisses me off is that in the ruling, the Colorado Supreme Court actually said they went back to look at Donald Trump's speeches through the 2016 campaign. What does it matter what he said? It doesn't matter what he said. The only thing that matters is what somebody does. Or, in the case of that rally, maybe what he said at the rally. Okay, right? You know? So they've come to the conclusion that based on his speeches, he's an insurrectionist. Well, that's your opinion. That has nothing to do with law at all. It's like, I'm just beside myself by this. A whole bunch of shit happened today. So that happened too. And one moment here. Oh, meanwhile, they set a record for border crossings down in Eagle Pass, Texas. Almost 13,000 people crossed into the United States illegally today, or legally, or whatever. You know, seriously, don't give me this shit about the fact, you know, that, you know, I'm waiting for a trial date, or I'm seeking asylum, or all that sort of shit. The thing I know is they got into the country. That's what I know. Now, I just found this out today. I don't know if you guys know this. So the mayor of Chicago, he got up and gave a speech about how it's just terrible that state of Texas is actually going to simultaneously, this happened yesterday, the state of Texas has now passed a law that they can arrest and deport people who come through their southern border. Now, normally, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if the Supreme Court throws out that, because immigration has been a federal issue always. But they've done this for the time being because the federal government won't take any action. I just found this hilarious. Somebody asked Karine Jean-Pierre at the press conference today about why aren't you guys doing more about this? And she said that she, speaking for the administration, she's offended by the fact people said they aren't paying attention to this issue. Yeah, sure, that's good. You're offended. Yeah, I'm offended by all the people you're letting in. You know, so the mayor of Chicago gets up and he gives a speech about how they're going to turn all these people who don't have shoes, who don't have food, away from, the, you know. And then some woman, and a black woman at that, stands up during the press conference and says to the mayor, "You don't understand. We didn't vote for this. We don't want these people here." I just thought, talk about getting it in your face, you know. And I just learned a little something today, too. I learned a little fact. 13,000 people entered the border at Eagle Pass, Texas today. Eagle Pass, Texas is only a town of 30,000 people. In other words, they let in over one quarter of the whole of the whole population of the town in one day. In one day, they increased the population of that town by over a third. And this happens every single day. Every day. And so now you're wondering why the Democrats are trying to block Trump from the ballot? What they're doing is wildly unpopular, not just even with Republicans and independents, even with Democrats. The polling is so bad for the administration, it's unbelievable. So now, I'm going to talk about this tomorrow. I didn't put this on the list today, but still, it's coming up. I've just stumbled into it, so I'm bringing it up about the fact that all of a sudden, over the last weekend, the Washington Post and a whole bunch of major media outlets, which of course are all democratically aligned, are all of a sudden starting to publish stuff about the Biden crime family. I mean, there seems to be a real push in the Democratic media to get Joe to step down, to not run again. I was going to say step down, but he'd finish his term, I assume. They're tired of this. The guy's a loser. I mean, he's incompetent. It's obvious. You know, people are starting to notice. And this is an interesting thing with our interview with Mark Morano that you're going to hear in a few minutes. The last question I asked Mark actually wasn't a question. It was a statement I made, and he agreed with it. And that is the press is finally, the public is finally starting to slowly catch on to how dishonest the press is. The polling for the mainstream media is also terrible. That's come out in the last few days, too. Nobody trusts it. Now, let me give you an example of why you shouldn't trust the mainstream media. If you listened to the show last night, you heard about the fact that I was talking about the fact that the Pope, the media is reporting the fact that the Pope, that the Vatican is now blessing same-sex unions. That's completely incorrect. And the only news outlet I know that's reported this correctly is HotAir.com. My friends over there. My friend Ed Morrissey, who wrote the story at Hot Air, he's coming on the show on January 23rd. He's the main editor over there. We talked to the associate editor, David Strom, and the weekend editor, Jazz Shaw, regularly. They're regular guests on the show. Now Ed, the main editor, is coming on too, but he wrote the story there. And the thing is, the impression you get is that nobody in the media, all these highly paid people, nobody actually read the doctrine or whatever the hell they call it. I can't remember the ecclesiastical term for that, that the Vatican put out. Actually, nothing's changed at all. Nothing. The only thing this document said was that, just repeating from last night, is that priests can bless the individuals in a same-sex union, but cannot bless the union itself. That's what it said. The union is still a sin. But you can, because according to Catholic doctrine, Catholic priests can bless anyone. You don't even have to be a Catholic. You know, they bless all of humanity. So basically, nothing. It was a reiteration of the status quo. It was a reiteration of the fact that we are not blessing same-sex unions. And the press reported it completely wrong. Let me give you another example today of something else they reported wrong today. I saw this story all over the place, and I ignored it because it's generally, you know, I only have so much time here, even though I prattle on forever, and this is not something I thought was a high notice item. And that is the fact that the press is reporting all over the place. Once again, you'll see this constantly everywhere, and you've probably maybe seen it already if you're following the news, that Tesla is going to have to recall almost every car they've ever built for a defect. Okay, so I read the headline, and I let it pass. I'm on other things. David Strom, our friend at HotAir.com, he reports the fact that what this supposed recall entails is a software update that's automatic. In other words, you don't have to bring the car in. It just happens. There's no recall. It was complete bullshit. This is completely fabricated. And why are they fabricating this? Because they don't like Elon Musk. That's why. Because Elon Musk took their Twitter away from them, and now they're really mad. So they're making this story up. It does not exist, you know, just to make themselves, to look, make Musk look bad and to make themselves feel fat and happy. I'm gonna end up pulling my hair out on the air. I swear to God, and I got some pretty nice hair too. I'm 68. It's not falling out at all, not the least bit. I mean, it's turning a little gray, but yeah, shit. And then another thing today. Okay, let's go on to this, and that is, and this is a good thing. I think a judge has ruled now that that the courts have to release the records from Jeffrey Epstein's plane logs. There's about 170 people listed on these plane logs, and I guess a few of these people won't be released because they're underage. So, and of course, that tells you something right there. You know, they're flying on the billionaire jet to the island, and they're not of age. But because they were underage, they will not be listed. But everybody else is going to be. And apparently, it appears there's a whole bunch of people in Congress, and not just Democrats, Republicans too, who are fucking quaking in their boots. You know, Dick Durbin actually tried to get this stopped. He's as a senator, he's the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He actually tried to put a stop to this, and he failed. So some of these names are going to start coming out now. And finally, and this relates to our interview today. And if I'd known this ahead of time, once again, if this, you know, there's only a few hours between us taping these interviews and me putting them on the air here live at 11 p.m. But this was in Breitbart, and John Nolte, God bless his heart, the guy is just, he's a columnist, he's their columnist today. He's the single most read person, maybe on the internet, I don't know, but he's totally unhinged, and I love him for that. But he wrote a story on Breitbart about the fact that there's a study now that is blaming the flight of people out of Democratic-run cities to climate change. Yes, they're leaving. They're leaving because of climate change. Yeah, yeah. You keep telling yourself that. That's good. This is. I need a little levity. That thing with the Colorado Supreme Court just bugs the crap out of me. I just don't. I mean, this is a watershed moment. Now, if the Supreme Court does not strike this down, it's going to open the floodgates via precedent for all sorts of states to do this. I mean, this could really, really turn the election. Everyone is going to the assumption that the Supreme Court will strike it down, and I kind of am too. But if they don't, I mean, we now have four people in Colorado telling the people in Americans in the United States who they can vote for and who they can't. It's disgusting, just disgusting. We're going to play this interview now. This is Mark Morano. He's the head of he does climatedepot.com, and he's been at this thing forever. Really interesting guy, and he'll be on in 12 seconds. Joining us from Washington, D.C., Mark Morano, the proprietor of ClimateDepot.com and a million books and a million television appearances. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going? Actually, I have three books, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate, Green Fraud, and The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown, which I highly recommend. Yeah,
I have the first one. I want to ask you in a minute about the last one. Normally, I don't do this, but I'm going to start this with a little story, if I can just indulge you for a minute or two, because it leads to my first question. So I got to tell you, I did a slow transfer from liberal to conservative around between like 2005 and 2015. So one of the things that happened, and this is about, I don't actually know the actual date, about 8-10 years ago, I was at the Christmas party of a very large scientific organization. I'm not going to name the organization. I'm not going to tell you why I was there. Although if you want to afterwards off the air, I will tell you. So it's a Christmas party, right? And there's a shitload of scientists there. And we're drinking, you know, it's a Christmas party. So I'm sitting with what I found out somebody told me was one of the premier climatologists in the United States, academic guy, head of the research at some major university. He's not famous to the public, but apparently very, very well known in his field. And I'm sitting at the bar and I'm drinking with him. And I said to him at some point, I said, well, professor, tell me about climate change. And he slams his drink down on the bar and he says, yeah, I'll tell you about climate change. Climate change is bullshit. And he goes on and on. First of all, he says, the only reason anybody in my field pays any attention to it is because it becomes so politicized, it's the only way you get any money to do any project at all. That's the first thing he said. Then he launched into why scientifically climate change is bullshit. And I got him in, I'm a little drunk at this point, so I don't really remember the details, but I've had cracked Patrick Moore on this show a couple times, and from what I remember, it's pretty much what Moore said, and that is, people, you know, they're trying to make CO2 out as evil, and actually CO2 is our friend, and all sorts of stuff like that. And I'm thinking, well, God, if, you know, and I was starting to have doubts about this anyway. I'm kind of scientifically inclined. I thought, well, shit, if this guy doesn't buy this, I mean, so my question to you, I told that story. How did you get into, or at what point did you decide that maybe this was all bullshit?
Great question. It goes back. I was a Ronald Reagan campaign volunteer at age 12 to 13 in 1980. My older brother worked on the campaign and I was doing his media. I was actually at that age in the fall of 1980, I was doing reel-to-reel tapes of then Governor Reagan sending it out to radio stations. So it was my first foray into media. At any rate, I always liked Ronald Reagan, except for environmental policy. I got caught up in the Save the Rainforest movement of the 1980s. And I was all worried about how many football fields a minute. I was worried about the species extinction. I was worried about the disappearing trees and nature. And it wasn't until the 1992 Rio Earth Summit that it was Dixie Lee Ray, the nuclear physicist. I think she was the former governor of, I want to say, Washington State. She was actually down in Rio at this Earth Summit debunking all of that. And I remember hearing it at the time. It was actually through Rush Limbaugh's radio show. And I remember hearing, there's no way. What is she talking about? It's the most intact forest. This is all overblown. This is outrageous. They're lying about the rainforest. I started investigating that. It ended up, she was right. It ended up doing my own documentary on the Amazon rainforest. And that was sort of my red pilling moment. This would have been early 90s to mid 90s. And from then on, I did a whole series of stories on species extinction, wetlands, and I was debunking all this. So by the time I got to global warming, which really wasn't until like 1999 that I ever really dealt with it. Uh-huh. And then later I went and worked for the U.S. Senate. I was very skeptical of the entire environmental movement. So I never actually believed in global warming at that point, only because all the other scares, I understood how they promoted them. It was done through funding, through fear, through getting basically the public afraid enough, and through that whole idea of intimidation. You can't be against anything they say, because then you're against the environment. You're against the earth. You're against clean air and clean water. And of course, climate is the same way now. If you're against what they say, you're a science denier. If you were against wearing a mask or locking down or church closures, if you wanted to open a church in COVID, you were a grandma killer. They have that same, whenever you sense that same intimidation, you know propaganda is afoot.
Yeah, that's right. So we had the Conference of Parties 28 in Dubai.
That is not a bachelorette party. That's not the 28th cop that jumps out of a cake. That actually means Conference of Parties. I just need to clarify that. Because people get confused. Cop 28, what? No, is this a bachelor party? No. Bachelorette party? No, it's not. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. That's right. But you have this kind of, it's kind of buried on your website at climatedepot.com. But I was talking about this a couple days ago on my show. And that is, the kind of thing that's buried in this is that 97,000 people showed up for this. I mean, I just find this unbelievable. What is it, a conference or a fucking city? I mean, shit. 97,000 people?
I was having a discussion with another host about this, and they're like, well, it couldn't be the biggest thing because, you know, you got Taylor Swift concerts, you have World Cup, you got all these big international sporting events. I would argue this. There may be events that have more people, maybe 500,000 or something. But what event do you know of that goes for, you know, 11 to 14 days straight in one city with that many participants? That I might be a world record. I don't know. I'd have to look into it. Maybe the World Health Organization has similar size meetings with their, you know, with their pandemic treaty and their annual meeting. I'm not aware of it, but it was the largest carbon footprint of any UN climate summit, double last year's, the largest attended. I've been to 18 out of the last 20 UN climate summits. I only missed two since 2004. And I can honestly say this one held in Dubai was the most, is there a word for unergonomic or just not ergonomic? Would take you 25, 30 minutes to walk from end to end. You'd go from one event to another and it could be a 30-minute walk. It was just crazy, oversized, not efficient, terrible layout. But you know, but it fit everyone and we comfortably fit, but it was a huge, I've never been to a conference center that big. Think of like 50 football fields combined together under one, it was all outdoors. So you had to walk. Uh-huh. And of course it was in the desert. So it was nice weather. City of Dubai, by the way, absolutely beautiful. It's as if the Arab government there decided to get unbridled development and say to hell with, you know, carbon footprints, to hell with woke policies. There were no open air drug markets. There were no graffiti. There was no homeless encampments. There was no crime. Everything was beautiful architecture. There were no Amazon cloud sharing warehouses that looked like they were from the early 1940s in Eastern Europe under Soviet domination, the 1950s built under Soviet domination. It was just beautiful. Everything about it, they embrace wealth. They embrace oil. They embrace development. They embrace economic growth. And they're not worried about all the other social maladies that the West has handicapped itself with, especially when it comes to environmental regulations.
Yes, but isn't it kind of ironic? I mean, it must have occurred to people that the irony of the fact that this was being hosted by a nation that's completely wealth dependent on oil.
Yes, it was. And the president actually said, he let out truth bombs. The president of the COP, Conference of Parties, is the host country. So it was Sultan al-Jaber. He let out truth bombs to open up the summit. The UN has no science to support the net zero agenda of 1.5 degrees Celsius. If we didn't have fossil fuels, we would all be living in caves. We'd have to go back to the Stone Age. And for his trouble, he was roundly condemned by Al Gore, by John Kerry, by the former Irish president, by UN officials, by the international media. And sadly, his started with his spokesman. They started backing away. Within 2 days, he had backed away from his statements. Of course, he supports net zero. He was misquoted in the media. But it was amazing. And at one point in this conference, it was only Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates defending fossil fuels. We in American were cheering on the OPEC nations. They were the only ones who were trying to prevent complete insanity at this UN summit. Ultimately, they went from phasing out fossil fuels, the language of the meeting that they agreed on, 190 nations, to we're going to agree to the beginning of the end, the eventual transition off of fossil fuels. So they were able to hoodwink enough people. Of course, it's all meaningless in that context, but That's what they met all those days, 100,000 people, all the private jets. To give you an idea of private jets, John Kerry arrived by private jet. The UK Prime Minister, Richie Sunak, arrived by private jet. The UK Foreign Secretary arrived by private jet. And the Prince King Charles from the UK arrived by private jet. And here's the kicker. All three arrived in three separate private jets as they supported a conference that wants to limit your freedom of movement. Banning gas-powered cars. During the conference, CNN had a whole article about carbon passports issued to citizens around the world to limit their travel so that governments could monitor how much they travel and cut off their ability. Your passport wouldn't work to continue flying once you hit your max. It's not going to affect private jets.
This strikes me as a bunch of adults acting like children. Let me ask you this, though. You mentioned Kerry and Gore. Now, my question about these two guys, I don't trust their intelligence at all. I think they're both as really stupid as individuals. But do they actually buy this stuff, or is it that they're too stupid to see the alternative, the fact that they're wrong?
Good question. Okay, that's a very good question because it's got multiple layers. I believe that many of the mid-level UN bureaucrats believe it to the extent they have no reason to question it, and it's good for their careers. I believe that people like Al Gore, I think he partially believes it because he's got some science teacher and he is passionate, but he also is, he went from a net worth of $1 million to $100 million within a few years of his vice presidency.
Yeah.
And I think John Kerry, looking for a legacy around the world, it's not that they don't, it's not whether they believe in climate change or the man-made or catastrophe. They believe in this utopian vision of society. And they know that a climate scare is a great way to achieve it. They know that a virus scare like COVID is a great way to achieve it. John Kerry is on record as saying the parallels between COVID and climate are screaming at us, and essentially that they were one and the same. The climate activists wanted the same things that happened during COVID to happen during climate. They wanted restrictions on travel, freedom of movement. They wanted a form of lockdowns. They wanted planned recessions to fight global warming. Well, what was the COVID lockdowns? But basically government-enforced recessions to fight a virus. So I think it's the same with Pope Francis. It's not that they believe the science and they're trying to save the world. It's that they know that science claims can lead to this utopian vision of a centrally planned socialist, you know, more based socialist world, Great Reset world, which is what fits their economic and social ideology. Now, when you have the young activists, I do believe many of them actually believe it. We had youth events there. I've talked to many young activists. I believe they think they have no future. During this conference, 18 young people sued Biden's EPA to stop for failing to stop global warming and to ensure their future. They actually said that the EPA's failure to stop climate change, whatever that means, was stopping the ordered liberty of their lives. And they had a lead plaintiff in this case. This is during the UN summit, but they're from California, named Genesis, a 17-year-old girl who, this is what they use to convince the public. Her parents can't afford air conditioning, so she has to do her homework in the evening when it's cooler because she can't focus because man-made global warming has made California, Longport, California, too hot. Well, the interesting thing about that is the climate agenda is all about rationing, restricting, and raising the cost of air conditioning. So much so that her own paper, local paper, hometown paper, the LA Times, actually had an article calling for public cooling centers. They don't want people to have private air conditioners in their home. They want you to get the government bus, pick you up, take you to a government cooling center during the hottest days of, you know, a heat wave. And there also, you have the Washington Post, you have the Biden administration going through the Kigali Amendment, through all these different treaties, trying to limit and restrict and make air conditioning more expensive. And you have a major media outlet saying, we don't need air conditioning. We've spoiled ourselves. We need to get used to more heat. You have Spain controlling thermostats so they can't go above, you know, below 80 degrees Fahrenheit, keeping everyone warm. And this is what the lawsuit is. So this is, these young people are believers. And a lot of people just don't really care about the science. They use it because they can scare you. And the scientists themselves are very cautious when they talk. They know they're being played and they're tools in this whole movement. But they'll say things like, when current reality, like polar bears, we have more polar bears than they've ever counted. They are disappearing, but only from Al Gore's books and movies. He got rid of them in a sequel. But the key is, scientists can still credibly say it's worse than we thought for polar bears. Like, what are you talking about? The U.S. Geological Survey have never counted this many. There's more than they've ever counted. And their answer is, aha, but our prediction of the year 2100 is much worse. Polar bears are facing an even more dire future than we thought based on our climate models. You see how they did that? They didn't really do anything corrupted. They just made a scarier prediction, and that replaces current reality.
Yeah. So, okay, and just getting to this thing about your book, The Great Reset, and what you just said. You talk about a socialist utopia. It's never worked anywhere it's ever been tried. What makes these people think they can get it to work now?
You know, it's the same thing. You know, we always had this during when socialism's failure. You'd point to Eastern Europe. You could point to certain countries that collapsed, Cuba. And they'd always say, well, it wasn't done correctly.
Yeah.
And the reason is, and Walter Williams, the economist, actually said at one point, socialist, if you debate socialist versus capitalism or free markets, socialism is always going to win that debate. Why? Because free markets and capitalism are evaluated on the reality of the situation, which is warts and all the flaws and pluses. Whereas socialism, and this goes as well for green energy and for green energy, solar, wind, are always evaluated on a utopian vision. So when you have reality debating utopia, reality is going to lose every time. So if you actually try to engage these people, they will tell you, no, solar and wind are cheaper than fossil fuels and they're more plentiful and they're taking over and they're just about to happen and we could phase off and we don't need fossil fuels anymore and we have to ban all plastics and everything. There's all these alternatives. They believe it. And you can't argue with them. You can't argue with someone who has a utopian mindset like that. It's like arguing religion with them. You're not getting anywhere. And the problem is this has infected the highest levels of government. And then you get leaders, even Republican leaders like George W. Bush, who will give you all the rhetoric. He virtue signaled to these UN summits. He didn't sign on to any treaty, but still he rubber stamped the science reports. He sent U.S. delegations to these meetings, never wanted to challenge the narrative, not one ounce. And even Donald Trump's sort of at fault for that officially. He himself challenged the narrative, but his delegation, when they came, they were just weak milquetoasts. They didn't want it. No one wants to rock the boat because once you rock the boat, you end up being vilified. And in fact, the only two world leaders that have ever really rocked the boat on climate, Donald Trump and Bolsonaro, and look at both of them. They're facing jail time by the establishment now. That's just a little message that goes after you. This is what happens to people who don't play the global game.
Yeah, but I just lost my train of thought. Excuse me. It's like arguing with children. I have to be honest with you, and I never thought about that. And that's brilliant on your part about the fact that you can't argue against a prediction of the future. You're right, absolutely. But the thing is, this is what high school kids do.
Yes. Yes. It's what Greta Thunberg did. You know, she said, why should we go to school when we have no future? We kids have no future. Why should they go to school? We're all doomed. We only have a few years left. You know, she says that all the time. Her climate tipping point expired and she was just silent about it.
Oh, I know. That's hilarious. Just absolutely hilarious. If you follow this, like you said, it's so much bullshit. It's unbelievable. I mean, I look at the climate thing myself. It's the biggest single grift ever been, proposed to the American public. And I probably don't have to tell you, you probably know this. So, you know, I had Patrick Moore on the show a couple months ago.
Patrick Moore, yeah.
Yeah. A week after that, the UN put on their website, we actually clipped it, the fact that they said they can solve the climate change problem if they have $75 trillion.
I remember that. Yes. I did a Fox News segment on that exact segment. And what that's saying, $75 trillion isn't even really conceivable amount. I mean, that's like an inconceivable amount of money.
That's right. It's like the whole thing about Dr. Evil and Austin Powers. Yeah, I want $75 trillion dollars. Right.
And the thing is, they couldn't show you when they talk about net. It's not like they can show you a cost benefit analysis. Okay, so are hurricanes going to be less severe? First of all, hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, wildfires, droughts are either on no trend or declining trend on climate timescales of 30, 50, 100 years. Even the UN admits this. Even the National Climate Assessment, written by Greenpeace activists, has to admit those basic facts. But again, where do they get you? It's worse than we thought. Our projections of hurricanes 30 years from now, they're going to be catastrophic, and we're going to have Miami underwater, and sea level's going to it's a children's game, but it's effective because it fits the official narrative. And again, just look at COVID. The parallels are screaming at us. John Kerry was correct between COVID and climate. But if you look at COVID, you had the top epidemiologists in the world from Stanford and Harvard and Michael Levitt and Nobel Prize winning chemist go on and talk about the Barrington Declaration and say that lockdowns don't work, masks don't work, vaccine mandates don't work. The whole idea of shutting down society is bad policy. It's unprecedented. It never worked. It was never recommended. What happened to them? They were deplatformed, canceled, defunded. You had the highest levels of government, Anthony Fauci, Francis Collins, colluding together in publicly available documents. Now we know from Freedom of Information saying, let's go after these fringe epidemiologists. Let's contact all the people in the media. They did, and the media did respond. These people were vilified. The brightest minds of epidemiology and public health, whereas the dimmest bulbs like Anthony Fauci and Francis Collins were the ones who were said to be the experts who you couldn't challenge. And the exact same thing has happened in the climate world. In fact, I go in my book and detail the exact parallels. We had Michael Levitt, Nobel Prize winning chemist, uninvited from a conference because he didn't support political lockdowns to solve the COVID. And in 2009, we had a polar bear specialist who said polar bears weren't threatened by global warming, uninvited to a scientific conference on polar bears because they didn't like him saying a scientific fact like that. It's the exact same parallel. People saw firsthand in COVID in rapid fire what happened. You lost your free speech. You lost platforms. You were silenced. And that's been happening for decades in the climate movement. And that's how you get this moronic, low-level, childlike level of debate because no one's allowed to challenge it. It's all settled science. Like, of course we're going to die. Of course the UN is going to limit the Earth's temperature to 1.5 degrees. We need this cap-and-trade plan of President Obama because the storms are getting worse. The implication is Congress is going to pass a carbon tax and somehow tornadoes aren't going to be as bad in Tornado Alley in Oklahoma. This is like toddler-level bullshit. Sorry, I don't know if you can curse on your show, but this is the kind of stuff you can't challenge or question. And all these idiots virtue signal and go along. And idiots include Republicans. Idiots include Mitt Romney and John McCain and Nikki Haley. And idiots include George W. Bush. And idiots include Bob Dole. And idiots include Kevin McCarthy. They go along with this whole agenda and will not challenge it for one second.
Mark, what happened to the press? I mean, why? you know, we're supposed to, it's supposed to be the fourth estate. And now they're basically the mouthpiece for the government. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, it's very simple. They are part of the ruling class elite. They're protecting their turf. We now have, if you go to Climate Depot, Annenberg Foundation, Rockefeller, Bill Gates literally funds the tunes of tens of millions of dollars to NPR, to Reuters, to the Associated Press. They're bought and paid for. This is press release funded climate coverage. It's not really reporting by anything we would have grown up with. This is just PR release. They're actually paid by these billionaire and millionaire foundations, and they go along with it. They do all the stories. They never challenge it. You have the CBS News anchor, Scott Pelley, when he was the CBS anchor, say, I won't interview a climate denier for the same reason I won't interview a Holocaust denier. I'm not going to give them voice, legitimacy. Yeah. That's their idea. That's their idea of journalistic standards.
I would like to point out that on the air, Scott Pelley comes off as somebody's pervy uncle. You know,
he is the arrogant prick. Is what he is. Am I allowed to curse on your show? I don't even know.
Absolutely. You've heard me do it. So, yeah, no. That's okay, one of the wonderful things about this. We're not under any FCC rules. So.
Okay.
So do you see any – what happens in the future here? I mean, is this going to get worse? I mean, is there going to be some sort of giant crash somewhere of ideological, you know, BS?
Okay. We are facing the intentional collapse of food, transportation, energy, free speech, and even our modern banking and financial system. I tell people, gouge your eyes out. It's over. Give up. Actually, no, I don't. We have to fight this back. We can fight this back, but we have to put pressure on our own side, on the people allegedly representing us. And this includes Republican leadership, I'm disappointed, by the way, in Ron DeSantis. I mean, he's fantastic. He belongs in the Governor's Hall of Fame. He's fantastic on COVID. I don't know where he is. He's pretty silent on climate. The one who speaks the best right now is Vivek Ramaswamy. The second one who's incredible on climate is RFK Jr. I interviewed him in 2014. He wanted to jail the energy CEOs for causing a climate crisis. He wanted to punish politicians who expressed climate skepticism. He later came out after COVID and when he's running for president, apologized, said he probably never should have said that. But now he says, on climate change, he actually says, I will not be talking about climate during my campaign. You don't have to believe in climate. Climate change has been hijacked for totalitarian control by the World Economic Forum and the UN and the global elite. Bingo! To me, that's what I tell people. You don't have to even get into the science. Let's not even talk CO2 or polar bears or sea level. Just let's go with the RFK position on climate. Because that is the most logical. This is, regardless of what you think of climate, regardless of what you think of a virus, either one, it was hijacked for totalitarian control of society. And that's what we're facing. So how you fight back, which is what your question was, the lowest level of politics, the school board level, in my last two chapters in the Great Reset book, I detail this. The lowest level of politics was the school board level, basically. And you had angry parents show up at these meetings fighting critical race theory, and COVID theater and masking and the lockdowns and social distancing, and they were fighting the transgender ideology. They were able to topple the entire Democrat Party machine and the union, school unions in the state of Virginia, almost toppled the governor in the dark Democrat state of New Jersey. They did have electoral victories everywhere. Shortly after that, every major city from San Francisco, LA, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, New York, Boston, Detroit, dropped the COVID mask and vaccine mandates because the lowest level of politics led this rebellion at the school level, toppled the major Democratic figures, and it spooked the entire establishment to backing away from all the COVID mandates. That's what we finally need. We need people to push back. We need this climate agenda to collapse. My hope is that if Donald Trump wins, he can correct the mistakes he had. He very tepidly, he did pull us out of the UN Paris Agreement or signal the intent, but he kept us in the UN process. He kept funding the UN IPCC climate panel, and he kept kept the idea of all the U.S. delegation going and legitimizing these meetings. He needs to do what he did with the World Health Organization, which say it's a corrupt, worthless organization. The U.S. is pulling out. We're defunding it. He needs to do the exact same thing, if not to the whole U.N., then at least to the U.N., you know, separated climate part of it, if he doesn't want to go too radical or if it's too much to bite off to ask him to pull us out of the UN. But if he pulls out of just the UN climate, all hell would break loose around the world. He'd probably be indicted on 100 new charges facing more prison time. But that's what needs to be done.
it's not just the indictments, though. And you brought this up as far as like RFK. These, a lot of politicians just don't want to be disliked. You know, yes. I mean, it's in that sense, it's back to high school. It's a popularity contest. You know, it's, you know, nobody. You know,
same with the UN comments. Al Jaber from United Arab Emirates. He wasn't going to be vilified. He was a host country. Yeah, it's also not only do they want to be liked, but it's that community of nations, and there's also sanctions, and you don't want to be an outlier. You don't want your media to think you're unintelligent, that you're dumb. It's all, it's that John Kerry calls it global shaming if you don't go along with the agenda. And that's why Donald Trump is a rare person who could take that kind of heat and sort of relish being hated by these people. He's very few. That's why I had someone knock on my door today. This is completely off topic, from the pushing Nikki Haley for president. And I went out and told him, never would I support Nikki Haley in a million years. I would vote RFK. I would vote libertarian. I wouldn't vote. Nikki Haley supports bombing Iran, expanding Middle Eastern war. Nikki Haley supports Ukraine. Nikki Haley supports social media censorship. Nikki Haley is very tepid on the climate issues and not going to push back. Nikki Haley had nothing to say about COVID mandates and masks and lockdowns. She is absolutely a tool of the establishment. It's George W. Bush reboot. I want nothing to do with her. And of course, they weren't ready for that kind of a rant from me. And I thanked them, and they went on their way. I tried to be polite about it, but this is being pushed by the Koch brothers, by the way, who I've always been accused. You're funded by the Koch brothers. I don't think the Koch brothers are giving me a cent.
You would know.
They're not giving me any money now. If some of the organizations I work for, they gave to a lot of conservative organizations. So I'm sure you could trace money that, oh, the Koch brothers. But they have become anti-Trump, pro-establishment. I have nothing to do with the Koch brothers. But my point, though, is that's why these people came around. They were supported by Americans for Prosperity, who are, you know, pumping in money to send people for the Nikki Haley team. And I'm telling your audience right now, do not vote for the GOP nominee if it ends up being Nikki Haley. And that could always happen, because we don't have, unlike when we don't have, if Donald Trump has a health issue, for instance, or is somehow unable to run, DeSantis has proven himself not capable of being a good presidential candidate just because of his charisma levels. And Vivek Ramaswamy is not catching on. I would vote for Vivek, but, you know, I don't know. He seems to be dropping in the polls. He doesn't, you know, I think there's a, you know, he may be come across too arrogant for people. But anyway, this is what we're facing. And my point is, if we end up with a nominee like Nikki Haley, if we had ended up with a nominee like Jeb Bush or Mitt Romney again, or McCain, we're doomed. We're going down this road blindly, because none of them will do. None of them want to take what happened to Trump. And that's part and parcel to what happened to Trump, was him rejecting the climate agenda. That was like rejecting the ruling class's religion. They weren't going to have a heretic among their mix.
Right.
And that's the same with Bolsonaro. They are, it's your banana republics, the U.S. and Brazil. We're stopping leaders from running, we're threatening them with jail time.
Yeah. The only positive thing coming out of this is the public seems to be slowly catching on to all this bullshit.
They do. It's slow. But, you know, I also think the polls are juiced, too. I don't know that Nikki Haley's doing that well in the polls. I mean, she's just, you know, she's, again, it's George W. Bush, who I loathe, Dick Cheney, who I loathe, George H.W. Bush, who I loathe. Bob Dole, I respected as a war hero, but I didn't like him as a politician. I still don't understand. You have George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, you have Bob Dole, you have Romney, you have McCain, and then people are like, oh, can you believe Donald Trump? Oh, it's disgusting. Like, I'm sorry, which one of those is Donald Trump? How does he not blow away every other Republican nominee since Reagan? It doesn't make any sense. That tells you a lot about what the Republican Party is. It's a con. It's a grift. Yes. It's meant to draw you in and make you think they're doing something when all they're doing is supporting the status quo establishment, and they're the caretakers of big government. And that's what they are. And that's what Nikki Haley represents. Sorry to rant on Nikki Haley, but.
No, that's okay. That's right. Mark, I promised you I'd keep this at 30 minutes, and we're at 30 minutes. So I could listen to you forever. I hope maybe you'll come on again sometime.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. I enjoyed
Thank you. Really appreciate it, too. You have a good day.
Thanks a lot. Okay.
Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you.
That's Mark Morano from ClimateDepot.com. Fascinating. Some great points. You know, I love these interviews myself personally, because I always seem to learn something from the people I'm talking to. And he's absolutely right about the fact that when he put it that you can't argue with the future. You know, that the difference between capitalism and socialism is the present, is reality, and socialism is the future. And you can't argue with the future. You can't, because it's whatever people say it is. Any rate, yeah, so that was great. That was fantastic. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. A little apologies there. His video froze through most of it, so sorry about that. Nothing we can do about it on our end, but we're going with it. So I got even more stuff here on just the bullshit of America. You know, and I want to point something out here too. He's absolutely right. You know, this is a conservative or what you would call it, liberal or libertarian oriented broadcast. It is. But we dump on Republicans almost as much as Democrats. I mean, he's absolutely right. There's nothing worse than the old-style Republican, who I think the current model of that is Mitt Romney. And he's right. Nikki Haley, although I personally don't have a lot of opinions either way about Nikki Haley a lot, but I hear this from all sorts of people about the fact she's basically an old-guard Republican, and she is. And old-guard Republicans are basically out for themselves. That's the thing. You know, he's right about George W. Bush for sure. I mean, it's like these are people. It's the old representation and the old reputation that the Republican Party used to have, and that is a whole bunch of politicians out for themselves. They don't care about the public. Now, you know, of course, right now the current crop, or I shouldn't say this, let me qualify that, because Bill Maher's been talking about this a lot. He says people are now vilifying him. He says he's a conservative, and he isn't. You know, he knows he isn't either. But what he is he's a traditional liberal. You know, so that the traditional liberals truly did seem to care about the public. The traditional Republicans didn't, and now that's kind of swapped. But the real problem is there's 20% of the Democratic Party that's basically crazy, that have jumped off the deep end of logic, and they now control the whole party. And people like Bill Maher are left out in the cold, you know. And the same thing with the Republicans. The new crop of conservatives do not want anything to do with the old guard Republicans. I certainly the hell don't. It's like, no, all these people did was look out for themselves. They got into office, and they're still doing it, you know. And I read a really fascinating interview today in Breitbart with George Santos, you know, the guy who just got expelled from Congress. And the interviewer was Emma Jo Morton, Emma Jo Morris. She is the political editor over at Breitbart. And, you know, she's talking about the fact that Santos says he's going to write a book spilling the beans about everybody in Congress and how the whole place is completely, utterly corrupt. And I know he's right. I've been doing this long enough to know that's true. I mean, it's terrible. The vast majority of people in Congress do not give a damn about their constituents. Not at all. All they care about is their pocketbook. And you realize, and like Mark just mentioned in the interview, within like 3 years, Al Gore went from being worth $1 million to $100 million. I mean, yeah, this is what happens now if you're in politics. You know, and even if you're a low-level congressman and don't get like kind of obscure and don't get a lot of attention, you still, at the very least, can usually, as soon as you're done with your term, you can become a lobbyist to make huge dollars. Now, they've been trying to float this rule in Congress for years about the fact that you can't become a lobbyist for like 5 or 10 years after leaving. That hasn't gone anywhere. You know, but yeah, no, he's absolutely right. And then you look at a guy like Al Gore specifically, and I've said this before, other than winning a job in the Senate, other than winning an election for the Senate, which I could call that, I don't even consider that a accomplishment. That's a personality contest. Other than that, he's failed at every single thing he's ever done. And I can even list them off. Air America, the current TV. I mean, all these things. And the thing is, actually, the ratings I don't know about current TV per se, but for Air America, the ratings were pretty good. They couldn't make a business out of it. It's just stupid, just ridiculous. I mean, he's not a smart man. And it's like a friend of mine was watching the show last night. He called me. I talked to him today on the phone. He says, "Yeah, your show is about two single things: idiots and conspiracies." And, yep, he's right. That's what it's about. Idiots and conspiracies. So speaking of that, we got part three now, and I'm gonna talk about the conspiracies part. You know, we do regular news on UFOs here. So what happened is that the Defense Act that just got passed by Congress was supposed to have a thing in there about revealing UFO information to the public. It got stripped out. A whole bunch of, as you know, I can talk about the congressmen who are for it, like Burchett and Sinema and all these people. There's a whole bunch of people against this shit. And once again, like Mark Morano was alluding to, I think somebody's paying them to be against it. That's what I think. They're getting paid for their vote, and so they voted against us because there's a whole bunch of people who don't want this UFO shit to come out. Why? There's all sorts of reasons. First of all, covering up for 50 years, a whole bunch of people busted a bunch of laws, so people could go to jail. Although even under the current rules set by the Arrow Commission and that Congress voted in 21, right now, you get immunity to jail if you come out and reveal what you know. So that you'd like to think that's a non-starter, a no-brainer issue, but apparently that people are still scared of this. Secondly, there's a whole bunch of people that don't want any of this to come out because of the scientific advances that are going to be commercially available to the companies that are developing this. Now, the way that works is that, and supposedly, you know, this is all hush-hush undercover, so I can't give you any definitive, I don't have any definitive information, but supposedly this happened in the Nixon administration. Somebody in government had the brilliant idea that, you know, as long as we hold on to these crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft, sooner or later, through the Freedom of Information Act, this stuff's going to get out. But if we turn it over to private corporations for them to quote unquote examine or research, and then we subcontract to them, they're not liable for the same rules. They do not have to play. They do not have to play under the Freedom of Information Act. We can keep this secret forever. And apparently, that's what happened. I don't know. You know, everyone pretty much knows it happened, but nobody really knows the exact time frame. The best information or the best estimate I've seen is it happened sometime during the Nixon administration in the 1970s. But anyway, it happened at some point. So yeah, so there's a whole bunch of companies, private companies. Everyone, Bigelow Aerospace is the one that everyone goes to. They've won several contracts regarding really high level black project stuff. Excuse me. So it's assumption that they're either involved in this or are one of several companies that are. Sorry. But these companies, assuming they've cracked any of this technology, have it coming, they're going to make boatloads of money. Now, there's a precedent for this. And this, there's, if you read The Day After Roswell, written by Colonel Philip J. Corso, Philip of the United States Army, this is a very interesting thing. I've talked about this before. Corso had, first of all, he was a relatively public figure. He was President Eisenhower's and General Eisenhower's right-hand men. So he has been in the public eye. He was, anyway. He passed away a few years ago. So he basically put his entire career on the line to write this book. And the book says thus. The book says he was touched to work on at the Foreign Technology Desk in the Pentagon. That was supposedly the committee or the department that handled technology by our adversaries, like Chinese. Like if a Chinese airplane crashed somewhere and we recovered it, you know, his job was to distribute the pieces or the parts of the airplane so that people could reverse engineer it, figure out what are. And so he says that by extension, he also got all the crashed UFO stuff. That's what he says. And he said what they did is they would take this technology, which they couldn't figure out, and they would pass it off both to universities and private companies and wouldn't tell them where it was from. They just say, you know, that one of our adversaries, we got this from a crash of one of our adversaries, and we can't figure out what's going on here. And they would pay big bucks for the universities and the companies to figure it out. And in many cases, they did. Supposedly, what they got out of this was night vision goggles, Kevlar, Velcro, CDs, supposedly. So, and the deal that the Army, the Pentagon, had with these companies is that you can have the patent. You can have the patent as long as we get unrestricted access to it for free. That, and of course, everyone jumped to that because, you know, that would even the you're not really losing any money. First of all, the Army actually gave this to you, you know. And so the fact that you have full commercial rights to this, oh my God, yeah. So yeah, we'll do that, you know. And supposedly we have a lot of technology in our everyday lives that Corzo said started from this program. Now, there's a lot of people, no one doubts the fact that he did, you know, he worked in the Pentagon and all this sort of stuff, and he worked at the Foreign Technology Office and all that stuff. No, that's completely beyond refute. The thing that people argue about is whether he actually had access to this extraterrestrial stuff. And it's highly contentious because his book has been, you know, you would think, you read this, it's almost like a smoking gun. It's sort of a lot of people, even a lot of people in the UFO community don't believe it. And it's like, and, you know, I kind of, in some ways, I kind of don't know why, except there are some things he's said in there that have been distinctly refuted by evidence in history. Like, for example, the Velcro thing, you know, the path of invention to Velcro is apparently very well known. And so, the fact that this, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's really interesting. Now, why did I bring that up? Now I have to go back and rewind and figure out why. It's because, the fact that we have this technology is kind of, you know, I've told you this. I mean, I pretty much know for a fact that we have these crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. The thing that's been debated now hotly is, this is the reason I brought this up. Is whether we have been able to reverse engineer any of it. There's a portion of the government now. Of course, this is all, you know, kind of clandestine. You know, this is all people talking out of turn because they can't talk on the record. Otherwise, they'd literally be arrested. That says that no, we do have this stuff. We've never been able to figure out how any of it works. We never cracked any of it. There's that. And then there's the other part, you know, I said, well, no, not only have we cracked it, we gave it to a bunch of companies and they figured it out. You know, so, you know, you never know. But anyway, what happened here this last week is that the stuff in the defense bill about the UFOs is technically still in there, but all the real juicy stuff that everybody really wanted was stripped out. And that's because too many congressmen objected. And why they objected, like I said, I'm speculating, my personal opinion, I'm guessing they were paid off. That's exactly what Morano was talking about. We talked about that all the time here, too. People get, you know, it's like people in government are just getting paid to do shit, you know. Okay, so this was run by the Daily Star in the UK. So I don't know if you know who Jimmy Carr is. He's a television personality over there. He says that at a party, and as a matter of fact, he says this is kind of like my story with Mark Morano at the science Christmas party. He said he was at a Christmas party a few years ago where Tony Blair was there. And he said him and a bunch of cohorts, there's in a corner getting drunk. And he said, somebody go ask Tony Blair about UFOs. And Jimmy Carr did. He went over to Tony Blair and said, tell me about UFOs. And Blair said something to the extent that there are secrets that even he isn't privy to. That's what he said. So I don't know. You can read that whatever you want. Yeah. And the last thing I got today, and we've talked about this the previous two, and that is that there's a big fucking solar flare coming, supposedly. The scientists are still talking about this. They're saying if this happens, it will knock out the internet and most electronic communication in the United States, maybe even for weeks. So the last time we had a solar flare this big was apparently well over 100 years ago, and there was obviously no electronic communication then. So we, you know, but that's, they know how much, what kind of power you need to actually knock all this shit out. And apparently this is going to happen. I don't know if you guys have been following this. This volcano in Iceland finally erupted this weekend, this last weekend. And yeah, it's not pretty. You know, I was listening to some cameraman was talking about the fact, you know, we've tried flying drones over the lava, but the heat is so intense, the drones just melt. So, you know, shit. Well, I don't know. We're not going to melt from a solar flare, but your phone might not work for a month. So that'll be interesting too. So tomorrow, I don't know if I didn't get a chance to talk about this at the top. Tomorrow, I'm calling them the tag team, Jeff Meyer and Jennifer Oliver O'Connell, who we refer to internally as Jew, J-O-O. So they're coming on as a tag team. They're gonna talk about the news. So Jeff Meyer, the publisher of Kong News, and Jennifer writes for Red State. She was just on a couple of weeks ago with it. You know, and Thursday we got a very special visitor from the north. I don't have to tell you about this. You know who I'm talking about, right? Yeah. Santa. Santa's coming here. Santa's showing up. Santa may be a little under the weather. I'm just going to give you a little heads up there right now. But he's going to be on a show on Thursday. So, and then we're taking all of next week off for Christmas, for the holiday. Anyway, I want to thank you folks for listening. Always a pleasure. I love doing these interviews. I always learn something. My goal is to get all these guests to basically spill one thing they've never said anywhere. And I don't know if we accomplished this time with Mark, but I have to tell you, I learned something. I mean, the whole thing about the fact that, you know, it's like, he's absolutely right. The present cannot compete with the future. It just can't, because you're making the future up. As a matter of fact, you're making it up as you go, you know. So don't buy the climate change stuff. Don't buy any of this crap. It's all crap, all of it. It is astonishing how these people want to control the populace. I mean, they're aiming for one world government, and the problem with that is no competition. I mean, you stop and think about this. Okay, we have no competition with the federal government, but inside our federal government, we have 50 state governments. And they do compete for all sorts of shit. They compete for citizens. They compete for business. And that competition keeps America more or less honest. It's less honest all the time, but it's worked thus far. So that's the problem with a one world government. You do that right now, countries compete against each other. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's like liberals would like they think competition's bad, and that nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing. At any rate, I want to thank you for letting me pontificate. This thing in Colorado did not sit well with me today. So I'll see you guys tomorrow. We'll join. O'Connell and Myra will be here, and hopefully maybe I'll get some sleep or something. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie, and good night to you wherever you are. We'll see you tomorrow.